Today at Rockin' the Suburbs, we reach the final frontier.
Yes, you really could say the writing is on the wall. Well, welcome to Friday, the last day of Iron Maiden Week. Thanks for sticking with us if you have. It's Mike Coley, great to be with you again today, mate. We've made it to the end of the week.
We've done it. Well, as long as we get through this episode.
We've survived, yeah. I would say I've not lost any hair. Well, I haven't lost any hair, but I didn't have any to start with. So, you know, both, yeah, it's true, but it doesn't really mean much.
Mine's reached my collar.
In the course of the week, during the course of recording.
Yes.
This is a band with such a vast catalogue that you need a haircut after spending a week talking about it. Okay, well, as the format is not changing, we're going to move into the final three studio albums of Iron Maiden's career, which is going to begin with 2010's The Final Frontier. And at the time of release, there was speculation that given the ages, you know, the band were getting older, they'd had a great run since the 2000 or 99 reunion, that The Final Frontier would indeed be the last Iron Maiden album. That turned out not to be the case, and they've continued on. But this, I don't know what you think about this one, Mike, but for me, this is one of the, it's right up there with Dance of Death. This probably is the best of the post-reunion albums, I would say.
Definitely. Yeah, The Talisman, that's right up there with some of the best of what Maiden's done.
It doesn't quite go as, you know, as what's coming is even longer, but it's a little bit, I mean, in terms of length, it's the same, but it just feels a little bit tighter in some ways, a bit more focused, and not quite so, quite as sprawling as some of the other stuff they could do. I mean, there's lots of long tracks on here. I mean, we've got an 11-minute closer. The songs are getting longer. overall, you know, I mean, looking at it here, you know, the shortest, yeah, we've got The Alchemist at 4:29. You know, that's the shortest song on there. But you've still got, you know, good sing-along, like classic-type songs, like, again, El Dorado as well. You mentioned The Talisman. You know, that there's much to, you know, if you've enjoyed anything of the post-2000 stuff, you're going to enjoy this. And I think it also, we're back into classic album cover territory as well with this one. We're into the right sort of full-on Eddie in all his glory on this one.
Yeah, that's when that first came out, that was what stuck out to me, was, hey, the classic Eddie's back in the fold here.
Yes, he always has a slightly different look for each album, but it's not as, compared to the more understated that we have with the albums we were talking about yesterday. This is full-on 80s style Eddie, right back in your face, grabbing your attention if you're walking past it and seeing it on the stand or the poster or whatever. So were you into this much when it first came out, Mike, or was it one where you sort of drifted into? Or
I gotta say, I've been kind of in the drifting mode with this one, you know, their final phase that we're talking about today. I have listened to them all. I've seen them on a couple of the tours recently, which is, you know, I'm finally being able to see them live after, you know, the first time I saw them in 2000. But I'm just, you know, I'm happy that they're still producing mm-hmm. quality material at a high level. And, you know, it's not something that I go to very often, but when I do, I dive deep into it. And it's just the Maiden in me, and that's what I like to listen to when I'm into that classic metal mode.
Yeah, I mean, I think the thing about all these albums we're talking about, and as, you know, with Final Frontier especially, you know, it is an album, it's not a collection of songs, and I think you really need to kind of, rather than just dip into it, you need to just play the whole thing. Just sit down, put yourself an hour and a quarter or so, whatever, aside, and just listen to the whole album start to finish and go on the ride with the band. Because as we've talked about on you know, all through the week, yeah, many of these songs will take you on that journey within each song, and then, you know, it works better if you go along for that journey rather than just sort of hopping on for a few stops, you know.
Yeah, these wouldn't fit individually on a compilation too well.
Yes, yeah, there's a few songs on there that you could probably pull out more for that, but yeah, they're definitely pieces of work, you know, which again, a band like Iron Maiden has a luxury of being able to do that because of the size of their audience and the sort of the durability and the size of their fan base. You know, they can put out albums that they don't have to worry about making a hit single. Yeah, they're not going to have a hit single. Yeah, now those days are gone.
If it hasn't happened in the past 42 years.
Yeah, exactly. They're just going to keep putting out, you know, what they want to put out. Fans keep going to see them, fans keep enjoying the album, so you know the albums always nearly always go to number one, so in many places around the world, so you know they're hitting the spot. So okay, well, let's take a little listen to one of the tracks from The Final Frontier, just so folks can hear what we're talking about. Let's have a little blast of El Dorado. That rocks. I mean, at the time they recorded that, they were in their kind of mid-50s. They're rocking pretty hard for a bunch of mid-50-year-old guys, I'd say.
No, oh, absolutely. It's got, I picked up a little bit of a UFO feel on that one too.
Well,
rock bottom.
Yeah, I mean, it's not surprising.
The bass line and then the riffs.
Yeah, I mean, UFO, one of the main influences on Steve Harris in particular. I mean, that's not, yeah. Yeah, he certainly would openly acknowledge the influence of UFO on him,
sure.
You know, and it's just,
and then Bruce's laugh at that part there.
Oh yeah, he's so theatrical with his performances. I mean, he really is a performer, isn't he? He's not a singer. You know, both in the studio and on stage, he performs. He doesn't just sing, you know.
He gives everything he's got, and he doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if he's in front of 100,000 people or just the people in the studio.
Yeah,
you're getting the same Bruce either way.
Absolutely. No, it's it's still really good stuff. I mean, there's nothing on there that's like in the same vein as, to say, the sort of the classic hits in inverted commas. You know, the Troopers, the Run to the Hills sort of thing. Everything's a little bit more meaty and a bit more. As you've mentioned before, mature and kind of all grown up. But you know, as we said, they were guys in their mid-50s at this time. They're doing pretty much what they wanted to do, you know.
Yeah.
Now I mentioned that there was speculation that Final Frontier could have been the last offering from Iron Maiden, and for a while it did seem that might have been the case, because whilst it turned out not to be the case ultimately, between 2010's Final Frontier and the next album we're going to talk about, 2015's Book of Souls, Bruce Dickinson was diagnosed with cancer on his tongue, which for a singer is not a good thing. And he details in great and indeed graphic detail in his autobiography the consequences of the treatment for that. We won't we won't go into that here right now. It's all out there in the book if you want to read it. But the possibility that Bruce may not have been able to sing again was a very real one, you know. And you have to wonder, given their experiences with when Bruce left the band through choice, that had his sort of health not recovered, I strongly suspect that may have been the end of Iron Maiden. I think they probably wouldn't have wanted to try and then carry on with a different vocalist again, you know.
I agree. I don't think that should be it.
Yeah, I think they were probably everything has been so settled. They all seemed to have been in a good place. They got everything, you know, with a touring schedule and everything set right. You know, that they just. They wouldn't have wanted to fall into that trap of trying to move on, you know, have with the reunion having been so successful and produce so much great music onwards, you know, to try to continue without Bruce would have just been a really sort of limp way to kind of fade out the end of the band, really, you know. But fortunately, he did make a full recovery. And so whilst everything was put on hold and things were delayed for the next album, while he was while he was getting himself back in shape, we did in 2015 get the Book of Souls, and something that had been threatening to happen for quite some time finally happened. In that they realised we can't fit all these songs onto one CD, we're going double.
Yeah, first double album.
And they went large, and they went large. Properly large. So we've got over an hour and 32 minutes of music on the Book of Souls spread over two discs. And not only that, we get the longest song in Iron Maiden's catalogue appears on this album. The track that closes side two, another one for the history buffs for you there, Mike, The Empire of the Clouds, which I don't know if you're aware of the story behind what that song is based on, but...
No,
so it's based on the story of the airship, the R101. So that's a British, airship, yeah, like the Hindenburg type situation that was involved in an accident, you know, in the age of the airships, when that seemed to be the future, that resulted in loss of life. And so, yeah, the Empire of the Clouds is this 18-minute epic that sort of, and what with Bruce being a qualified airline pilot, his interest in aviation and the like. That led to that particular song. So we've got an 18-minute album closer, which will put some people off. I fully understand that. Yeah, once we get into the back end of their career, I totally get that it's not going to be for everyone. But the themes and the sort of pulling from history and for other parts of culture continue, you know. And so, yeah, any thoughts you got on the Book of Souls, Mike?
I was just excited that they came up with a different version of Eddie for this one, the Mayan version of Eddie, and I got to see them on this tour.
Yeah, it's cool,
and,
isn't it?
You know,
cool.
I made sure I kind of got myself familiar with the album before, because I know how their tour cycles go, where, you know, if they're supporting an album, they go heavy into that album on each show, and they sprinkle in a few of their greatest hits throughout. So I knew that there was going to be this type of show, where they're going to focus on the new album. So I made sure I got a little familiar with it. And Mayan Eddie was pretty cool. They kind of do a lot of that mythological stuff, and you know, they get into Egypt, and they get into all that, you know, the flight of Icarus and the Greek mythology. And now they're into our hemisphere, the Western Hemisphere, and they're digging into Western Hemisphere mythology and history, and I was excited for that. And, you know, obviously it's not a thematic, you know, it's not a theme throughout the album, but, you know, they do have a song or two about that type of stuff on here. And I was excited that it was a double album too.
Yeah, it seemed kind of inevitable, really, because they've been pushing at the seams, you know, because over the past few albums, you know, the songs have been getting longer and longer, and it's like, as we said yesterday, at a certain point the dam was going to break, and it did break on this one.
The dam came broken and just blew everything in its path out of the way.
Yeah, yeah. No, I think, but I think again, this is a really good album. And again, it maintains that quality that the Final Frontier had. You know, I think it's a step above Brave New World and A Matter of Life and Death. You know, and it's we deal with Dance of Death. You know, as just keeping that real high quality bar going. You know, which again, this late into their career with their 16th studio album is quite staggering, really.
Yeah, it's amazing that they've been able to keep this consistency. You know, obviously, you know, they're going to have a few duds here and there. But over the course of 40-plus years, they've maintained their consistency and they've maintained their legacy. They're not going out with a whimper, for sure.
Indeed not. And so not with a whimper, but shall we take a listen to someone from the Book of Souls, Mike?
Yeah.
Any particular ones you want to highlight there?
I kind of dig the Red and the Black.
Yeah, nice. Okay, let's give it a blast. We won't play all 13 and a half minutes of it, though.
Nah, we don't need to do that.
Amount of changes we get there just in those 2 minutes, you know.
Right. You kind of have Bruce going back to what I was talking about earlier in the week with Paul Di'Anno's vocals going along with the music, you know,
yes,
pairing with the music. So less, you know, less an instrument itself at this point on this song, it's accompanying the instruments as Paul Di'Anno did back in the early days, obviously at a higher octave range.
Yes, and I mean, partly you do wonder whether part of that is maybe due to the fact that he was, you know, still, you know, he'd come off potentially life-threatening, but certainly career-threatening surgery,
right?
And you know, that maybe he didn't, you know, and he's obviously still live, he's still cutting loose and on the classics in the same way, but also it works with some of these more sort of proggy epics that they're doing. You know, there's so much going on throughout all the songs. There's chances to mix it up and, you know, to do that more sort of following the melody line in places. It still works, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, you know, when they first joined the band, that difference was sort of highly noted, you know, and as opposed to now we kind of expect pretty much everything and anything.
it's almost kind of a catch-all for some of their history, you know? I mean, that bass line, you feel shades of Rime of the Ancient Mariner or some Power Slave, and you got the epicness of the song itself.
Yes. I mean, it's amazing that at 13 and a half minutes, it isn't even the longest song on the album. But I do love it sounded to me like Steve Harris was playing like an 8-string bass there on the intro.
There was something interesting going on there, yeah.
Yeah, I think either it's been doubled an octave high. Either he's an octave, or I suspect it's probably, it might be an eight-string bass, possibly. But anyway, it all sounds interesting, and it's good stuff. The okay, well, I think unless you've got any more thoughts on the Book of Souls, Mike, we shall move on to last year and their most recent, and as time of recording, their last studio album, Senjutsu, which is another double. So once they crossed the Rubicon of putting out a double studio album, they're like, stuff it, just do it again.
As well keep doing it.
Just do it again. You know, I think it just continues the theme. We've got Samurai Eddie this time, as opposed to Main Eddie on the cover, but another really good and distinctive Eddie cover. And this obviously is sort of fresh in the memory still, really, from being released just last year. I didn't quite make my top 10 best albums of last year. It was certainly on the. Even the top 15, but didn't quite crack my top 10. But that doesn't mean it's a bad album by any stretch of the imagination.
This got some listens for me, especially the first two singles, The Writing on the Wall and Stratego.
Yeah. Let's take a listen to Writing on the Wall, and then we can talk a little bit more about that, because that's quite an interesting song. Okay, that's something a little bit different here, Mike, on this one.
Definitely different. That little acoustic intro there, you don't hear that in an Iron Maiden song.
Not just the acoustic intro, even the riffage and the feel. I mean, I think this is an Adrian song as well, I believe, remembering reading from the pre-release. It's an Adrian and Bruce song, mainly.
Yeah.
And which is probably why I like it so much. Because I do like an Adrian and Bruce song. But you got that. It's almost got this folky, then bluesy kind of riffage. It doesn't sound anything like the first. Play the first 30 seconds, like you wouldn't think it was Iron Maiden. Then, like the two other guitars come in with the harmonized leads. Oh, okay, it is Iron Maiden.
Right, it's got that little Western theme sound to it, where you kind of picture that apocalyptic landscape, which the video for this captures.
Oh, the video
awesomely.
Yeah.
The video is fantastic, and that just adds to the visual part of the Iron Maiden aura, you know? It's this song and the way they paired the video to it, it's a perfect pairing.
It's absolutely wonderful, Mike. Yeah, you I'm so glad you mentioned it, because if you hadn't, I was going to... I would, again, encourage folks to hopefully when the show comes out, that we can link this in the show notes or something, but to watch the video that goes with this. They put out a shout out for animators to work with them, and I'm sure there was, you know, a long list of people running to want to work with Iron Maiden. Given that, the rich sort of visual history. So they've got this film that they've the animated film they put together to accompany the music, and it, as Mike says, it absolutely accompanies it perfectly. I mean, if you are a recently outed from office man baby, you may not wish to watch it because you might find it a little upsetting, but you know, for the rest of us, we can enjoy it. But yeah, it just shows that they've still got new tricks up their sleeves, you know, even this late in their career in 2021. You know, it doesn't have the gallop, certainly not in the bit we played there. It has more of the lurch.
It's got a lurch, and it's got almost a classic rock feel to it.
Yeah, but yeah, they just change it up again, and it's different while still being recognisably Iron Maiden. And yeah, the fact that they can pull that trick on their 17th album, because it doesn't really set, you know, parts of it, the song structure, it reminds me again of the songs we talked about from Seventh Son. Like Can I Play With Madness and The Evil That Men Do, in that it has more of that chorus, verse, chorus,
pre-chorus,
kind of structure. It has that structure that they don't often have, but it also has all the other elements of Iron Maiden with the sort of instrumental stuff that, you know, it does that without sounding, it has classic rock elements to it, but it doesn't quite sound like classic rock. It's still got something else.
It still sounds Iron Maiden.
Yes, which is what went wrong with some of the stuff in the, you know, in the early to mid 90s. You know, that's a glimpse of perhaps what, had Bruce and Adrian not left, what we might have got in the mid 90s. Mm-hmm. You know, with something like that, because it hits that kind of that spot quite nicely. And I think it's a great way to kind of to wrap up, to show that actually this band that's been going, that started was formed in 1975 in East London, is still producing interesting and fresh sounding music in 2021, you know?
That they are up the irons.
Indeed, up the irons. So we'll just wrap up with a little bit of summary there, Mike. I think we talked about their ages. I mean, listening to the fact that they're producing this double album and they're still touring and still rocking it hard. Apart from Bruce, who's 63, the rest of the guys in the band are 65, apart from Nico, who is 69. You know, the fact that they're still touring and playing these songs, and he's still doing these 2 hour plus shows, age 69. I mean, I hope we can rock that hard when we're that age, Mike. Eh?
Yeah, I'm having a hard time doing that at 52.
They don't play the same amount of, they take more time off, but hey, man, they're all, apart from Bruce, they're all old enough to get their pensions.
Yeah, and Bruce isn't there for
the, I mean, they're not doing it for the money, they're doing it for the love now. I mean, none of them need the money at this stage. Yeah, they're doing it just because they want to, and the fans want them to. So, I think in summary, I think it's hard to overstate the importance of this band in the history, particularly of heavy metal music. Would you say, Mike?
I'd say they are definitely in the, when you're talking about the history of heavy metal, they're definitely in the discussion for sure. You know, along with Black Sabbath, who basically they invented the genre pretty much. And Maiden is definitely up there, just for all the stuff that we've been discussing throughout this week. Is, you know, not just with the sound, but the way they've gone about their career, where they built it organically over the course of all these years, and they're still doing it now, and they've obviously influenced so many other metal bands throughout their career that it's you can't not talk about Iron Maiden when you're talking about the history of heavy metal.
Well, I don't think you could find a metal band that's post 1980 that would admit to not being influenced by Iron Maiden.
No, you'd be hard.
Yeah, I think it'd be impossible to find one that hadn't been influenced by them. It's just as simple as that. They are, you know, as you said, Sabbath obviously are like the Rosetta Stone of metal, but I think Sabbath's you know, the constant lineup changes, and there's too many bad albums in the Sabbath catalogue.
Yeah.
You know, it tarnishes the legacy. You know, with Maiden, you've got the two 90s ones that, you know, we kind of overlook, and things petered out, but they were still turning out classics on the bad albums, you know, or the lesser albums. You know, the consistency of the output is there. I mean, the only other band that's in my mind that's in the conversation with Iron Maiden and Sabbath is Metallica, purely because of their impact. Again, find a metal band post Metallica that would admit to not being influenced by Metallica, and they're lying,
whether directly, you know, or indirectly. You know, I mean,
yeah,
it just, you know, seeps into you somehow because it's there. It's been there.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, Metallica was so big at one point they transcended metal. They weren't even metal; they were just the biggest band in the world. You know, so but I think with Maiden as well, and I think Metallica have taken this to heart, and certainly in recent years, you know, have always tried to tour to places. You know, they were touring behind the Iron Curtain. Iron Maiden were, you know, in Poland and these sort of places when people, no other bands were going there, and I think that's part, you know. I think probably Maiden are not as quite as big in America as they are in the rest of the world. You know, you talked to previous shows, Mike, about these, you know, the South American shows. You know, they're playing to 100,000 plus audiences in South America. Yeah, I don't think they're doing that in the States. I mean, they're still playing to probably big arenas, but I don't think they're playing.
Yeah, when I saw them in Madison Square Garden on the Book of Souls tour, there were still seats available when I went.
Right,
Madison Square Garden, which is a place they've played, I don't know, dozens of times, and
yes,
have sold out over the years.
Yeah, I mean, when I saw them last time on the Legacy of the Beast tour at the O2 in London, which is kind of like so it's one of the bigger. It's probably the biggest indoor arena you can see a band in the UK, and that, yeah, you wouldn't, that seemed pretty. They played multiple nights there, let's put it that way, you know, and it was pretty full. And I think one thing about, I'm sure you'll agree with this, Mike, going to their shows, you know, it's not just guys of our age who are turning up at their shows.
No, absolutely not.
You got teenagers there.
Yeah, they were you know, younger than teenagers, preteens that were coming to the shows that I've been to recently, which was awesome. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, and I think that's a big difference with, again, a lot of sort of classic acts, is that they are still drawing a new audience, which is why they keep turning out these new albums, doing the sort of new stuff, because they've got whole generations going to see them in their live shows in all parts of the world, you know, not just in Europe and America, but, you know, in the Far East and, you know, Indonesia and places like this. You know, they're massive, you know, India, you know, they're all over the world, you know, Iron Maiden goes and there's Maiden fans there, you know.
I mean, you kind of got to wonder, as the band, you know, as much as they, I'm sure they, you know, they enjoy the income and the popularity that they've gained over these years, but that, you got to wonder, like, at this stage in their career when they're putting a tour together. Oh, boy, we got to jet to, you know, Jakarta and play at least a couple shows in Indonesia and then maybe Malaysia. And then
yeah, but I guess the thing, I mean, and clearly at a certain point they're going to stop touring because, you know, age will catch up.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just sit on a stool and strum an acoustic guitar. If you're Iron Maiden, you've got to give the, you know, people want the Iron Maiden show. So I don't know how many more tours we'll get from them. So the end will certainly come at a certain point when they'll probably call it a day. But, you know, I know from the very little gigging that I've done in bands that I've been in, the adrenaline rush, Mike, is unlike, there's very few things that compare to playing your own music on stage. And I've played to small clubs. I'm not talking about playing to 100, 150, 200,000 people who are all singing your songs back at you. I think the elixir of life and fountain of youth is certainly some of it, as Springsteen would also illustrate, is to be found within
that
performance. Yeah. You might need more days off to recover, but that's a hard drug to give up, man.
I can see why.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And, okay, well, I think any final thoughts, anything else we want to add, Mike, before we...
I got no more final thoughts other than go listen to some Iron Maiden, people.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, there will be a playlist to accompany this week, which will hopefully guide you into some of the songs that we've talked about and a few others. If this has piqued your interest, if you're not into Iron Maiden, we sincerely hope that you will be listening to some of their music as a result of this week. So all that remains really for me to say is to say, Mike, thanks to you for keeping us company on this week and having this chance to talk about Iron Maiden for these five shows. And thanks to Jim and Patrick for letting us do it and take over the pod for a few shows. And if you want to contact the show, you can do so by on social media. It's @SuburbsPod. You can email them at rock@suburbspod.com. You can call the Suburban Party line on 612-440-1984. You can contact me on I'm at Powderfinger71 on Twitter or Stephen Relish on Facebook. Mike, you are?
I am at Mike Coley on Twitter and Mike Coley on Facebook. And I also have a website, 315music.com.
So, yeah, be sure to let us know what you have thought both about Iron Maiden week and about the music of Iron Maiden, and if this has sparked an interest or revived an interest or even introduced you unbelievably to the music of Iron Maiden, then let us know how you've got on with it. But thanks for your company this week, Mike. Thanks for being with us.
It's been a pleasure, Stephen. Thank you.
Likewise, mate. And we can only finish in one way with Up the Irons.
Up the Irons.
Back.
Yeah, I don't know what happened.